is the Under Center Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Under Center Podcast. This is Dara, your host, and we are going around the league in 60-ish minutes. We're going to speak about some of the biggest stories around the NFL this week, heading into week six of the season. I'm delighted to be joined by the Malloy brothers, Fionn and Rian. Boys, how are we?
Doing well. Good to be back. Missed the show last week, but I listened in. It was a great show. I think I'm looking a bit, for any of our viewers that are watching, I'm looking a bit like I'm on a deserted island for a while. I think I need to get a haircut going a little bit, maybe a trim and a tidy up a little bit, I think. Especially you two lads look like you've had haircuts in the very recent past. So I think we've got to keep up a little bit.
I was on the same desert island myself for a long, long time there. I only got my haircut like on Saturday. So yeah.
Near pandemic levels, I have to say.
It's like, lads, it's a terrible thing to say about Rush anyway, saying calling it desert island. I'm sure they have barbers in Rush, so you don't worry about it. I'm sure you're grand. But no, look, listen, hopefully you do get a haircut and in time, because I cannot accept this scruffy behavior now for next week's show for sure. I let it grow here because I can't afford to let it grow. Well, actually, I can't afford to let it grow. Just to have a bit of a five head, so it doesn't work too well on camera. I see Fionn, you cover up very well there now with your scruffy do, so we'll see. But away from NFL news, the Pirates are back this week. First rookie camp of the season took place last Sunday. Very good turnout. Happy out with it. Obviously, you boys used to were there. Fionn in a playing capacity, and Rian, of course, unfortunately not in a playing capacity due to an injury. But it was good to be back out there again.
Yeah, absolutely. Seeing Fionn throwing out footballs with his QB3 designation, it was excellent to see.
Yeah, I think it's important. I'm going to look forward to, I think, when we get back into the pads, Dara, even if it's not necessarily hitting, I want to see always the new guys getting in the pads is something interesting for them with a nice rookie class up, some very good performers, and the old heads as well, just get the body shape in. There was a lot of talk in the group chat. A few of us have been dedicating our time to some strength and conditioning training the last few weeks. Apparently, a lot of people thought it was optional. In my book, it certainly wasn't. So that will for sure be held against them the first time we put some pads on and start doing laps of the pitch. That will be remembered. So they're going to have to play a little bit of catch-up, maybe an extra lap or two here or there, get them on the same level. And, of course, the lads that were out there doing the strength and conditioning, we're going to have to show off now. If we look like we're no better than the lads who haven't done anything, then I think some eyebrows need to be raised and some questions need to be asked.
Do you really think Dara's going to be front of the pack after all of that strength and conditioning?
No, but I'd like to see him show up on time, Rian. That'd be a good step.
Hey, he did this week.
I was there before you this week. You were the one that was...
That's because my fiancé decided to rescue a stray dog. That was what happened there. So I would have been there at 9:30 if it wasn't.
Look, stories of stray dogs and, you know, fuel.
Yeah, Rian got out of the garden.
No, but like you said, Fionn, it was a good rookie class. And they should, hopefully, this is the second week of our rookie camp this week. So if there is anyone listening that is interested in playing and is around the North Dublin area, you're more than welcome to come down and give it a try, because we are running the second week. We have, I do know of a few new people that are going to be trying it out for the first time, and then obviously the returning ones from last week too. So yeah, it's some good numbers there. Hopefully they will grow as the weeks progress. Of course, we have our players' night soon, so I'm sure there's going to be more than we'll ever see a training out for that, for sure, just because it's a bit of a boozer.
Yeah, a few of the old retired lads come back thinking they're going to get a little gimme award, or someone's going to cry seeing them again saying, "Hey, you're going to the Hall of Fame," something like that. I don't think it's going to be the reality, but yeah, always a few boys come out of the woodwork for this kind of regattas.
That orange jacket for the Pirates Hall of Fame, is that what it is?
Something like that, yeah. Maybe an eye patch. Mind you, the football we played last year, you kind of want an eye patch, I think.
I think they were already playing with the eye patch on. But anyway, look, listen, we can talk AFI all we like for the rest of it, but that is up for the lads at Green Zone, so we'll let them do that. We're going to talk NFL. And the first story that we're going to cover is actually one that came out today on day recording, which is Tuesday, which is the news that wide receiver for the Vikings, Justin Jefferson, is heading to IR with a hamstring strain. The Vikings, of course, are 1-4 after losing 27-20 against the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday at home. What was meant to be a season for the Vikings to sort of progress and to sort of move forward, and especially in a NFC North division that was there for the taking, with, of course, Aaron Rodgers leaving the Packers and them going through a bit of a rebuild. They have started the season quite poorly, like I said, going 1-4. The games that Jefferson is likely to miss is, well, at least he will miss, because he's out for four games at least, and that is at the Bears this weekend, at home to the San Francisco 49ers, which is a Monday night football game, at the Green Bay Packers, and then at the Atlanta Falcons, which, Rian, I'll go to you first on this one. Very, very possible that the Vikings could be 1-8 by the time he is available to come off IR.
It is indeed. It is indeed. And if you looked at the schedule kind of towards the start of the season, you would have said, oh, they'll get through this, no problem. You know, the Atlanta Falcons are there, and so are the Chicago Bears. But the Chicago Bears have hit a bit of form at the moment. They were certainly looked quite good in the first three quarters versus the Broncos, and then they laid the smackdown on Fionn's Commanders there on Thursday night. They're a team that's looking pretty okay now. Their play calling seems to be sorted out. DJ Moore has actually become relevant in Chicago for the first time. So yeah, that's going to be a tough game for them. And really, when you look at the stats that Justin Jefferson puts up, he accounts for a lot of that offense. And without him there, that secondary for any given team are going to be much more spread out across the field, because you do not need to double a guy like Justin Jefferson. So this is going to be tough for Kirk Cousins. He's not going to be able to stuff the stat line like he usually does.
Yeah, Dara, I think you postulated off air when we were chatting that if they go 0-4 across that span, they may shut them down altogether for the season. I think that's going to be a realistic possibility, at least in my eyes, when you look at some of the games they play after he might be expected to come back. So first game back is obviously the Saints, but then you've got the Broncos, the Bears, and the Packers. Like, at least the Broncos and the Bears, I think some business decisions are going to be made, right? If you roll into that game 1-6, 1-8, you're starting to vie for that first round draft pick. And I think the first pick of the draft. And I think you start to evaluate what that might be and whether that quarterback needs changing. And so maybe some business decisions, like you said, I think that's a real possibility that Justin Jefferson gets shut down. As Ray mentioned, he's a big part of that offense. Kirk Cousins needs him and relies on him quite a lot. I don't know if it's as dynamic. The run game hasn't looked particularly good this season. So that's going to be a concern, whether that can pick up any of the slack of having Justin Jefferson out. And then, of course, when you play a teams that are also, at least at this point, 1-4 in the Broncos and the Bears, I'm not going to say the word tanking, but business decisions, let's leave it at that, are going to be made when those games come around on the schedule, especially if the trends for those three teams continue the way they are. As Rian said, though, the Bears are looking good, so it might be moot by the time they get to them. But certainly, I think it's going to be difficult for the Broncos to turn around in any quick time.
Who?
The Broncos. Sorry. Your little ponies.
No, but Justin Jefferson doesn't play for the My Little Ponies.
No, that's what I'm saying. So the business decision of whether you activate them or keep them deactivated when kind of both those teams are likely to be rolling in somewhere around the 1-8 mark, likely to be competing with Carolina, and maybe the Bears, if they can put together some more wins, will stretch themselves clear of that little group. But that might be a little huddle there of opponents that are coming up that could be vying for that number one draft pick.
Mm-hmm. I've just thought of something with the trade deadline. Where does that fall in relation to the 4-week IR period for Justin Jefferson?
Well, I was going to bring that up actually, Ryan. Very, very well thought out, because the trade deadline is October 31st. That is just after the third of those four games, which is at Green Bay. So if they are even 0-3, is there a possibility? Now, I don't think there is. I don't think that the Vikings are going to let Justin Jefferson go unless he kicks up a fuss, but I don't think he will. Because I think they have the mindset that they're going to pay him this offseason. Now, whether he accepts that, knowing that more than likely he's going to have to have a new quarterback throwing the football to him next year as well, there's a lot of things up in the air when it comes to Minnesota and the Vikings, like, because I think they're teetering on that edge, whether they want to push to try and win now or whether they want to be like, okay, let's take a step back and, you know, have a look at the tools that we have available and maybe start to rebuild a little bit.
Yeah, my question was not so much about Justin Jefferson, because I don't believe you're allowed to be traded when you're on IR anyway. So his trade period is now over for this season. My question was more to do with Kirk Cousins, because I think they do need to start making business decisions as to whether they want to move on from Kirk Cousins. Now is the time to get the value for him. If a team like, say, the Jets is in a position to still make the playoffs, but the likes of their quarterback is playing poorly, and now he didn't play so poorly against the Chiefs, but he has traditionally played very poorly, do they maybe think about moving on Kirk Cousins and rolling with the backup for the end of the season?
Well, see, here's my question to that, Rain, and I've heard it a lot, and maybe you guys can explain to me there's something I'm missing, but I understand completely that the Jets needed or might want an upgrade at quarterback, and you can argue whether Kirk Cousins is that or is not that versus Wilson. But can the Jets still be competitive with what you would have to give up to get Kirk Cousins? I mean, is a draft pick going to be enough? And if it is it a number? Is it a first rounder? Is it a second rounder? Are you comfortable with that?
Absolutely.
Me personally, yeah, and that's what I'm wondering.
Just worth-wise, though, I'm saying. Like, he's not first or second rounder, because he basically, the team buying knows that the team selling is in sell mode, and also the fact that he's in the last year of his contract. Also, just film before you move on, just I had a look at it there. Teams can trade players who are on IR.
Okay.
They are allowed to. But anyway, sorry, film. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting. Yeah, maybe if they end up taking a fourth round pick for Kirk Cousins, but then I wonder where's the incentive for the Vikings to sell. I mean, they've stuck with Kirk Cousins for this long. I thought, as much as I'm sure they'd like to move him on, I imagine in my end, it's you would need a motivated buyer. I don't think that they're willing to just throw him away just for the sake of, sure, we'll restart. I mean, at that point, just bench him. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know. I think it's tricky, specifically in the case of the Jets. I just don't see, maybe my own opinion is that the Vikings just aren't going to be motivated enough to get rid of Kirk Cousins, that, at least in my perception of his performance, is going to get them equal value or anything close to something they might actually want. But hey, maybe there's forces going on. Maybe they do want a total reset. Maybe they are driving, as I mentioned, for that first pick in the draft next year.
Yeah, for me, well, personally...
Sorry, I was just going to say very quickly, Fionn, you were saying that, like, I don't know if a third or fourth round pick is worth it for Cousins if you bench him. A third or fourth round pick is better than nothing if he goes for free next year, or at the end of the year, I should say. So it's still an extra pick. But sorry, Ryan, go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much my point exactly, was that if you can get a third round pick for Kirk Cousins and you're sitting at 1-7 by the time the trade deadline rolls around, I think you kind of have to consider taking it. And I know there's not many teams at the moment who are in dire need of a quarterback, but all it takes is for that one injury to happen to end the season for a quarterback. And then there's teams panicking. So say Joe Burrow goes down for the rest of the season. Do the Bengals give up a third for Kirk Cousins because they know he can at least run an offense to some level of, you know, capacity. I think maybe they do. I think it is a good plan, and with the quarterback draft class being the way it is coming into next season, I think that there is going to be value available on the board outside of the top 10 at the quarterback position. So yeah, I think the Vikings may have their choice of quarterbacks coming into next season. Bar Caleb Williams, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I want to shift it over then to, you know, the start that the Vikings have had in general. And I don't know if you guys are asking any questions in terms of, you know, the head coach, Kevin O'Connell. It is a very poor start. They have gotten away with it last season when they had the highest amount of wins by one score in the league. Obviously, those one-score games now are coming back to haunt them. They're on the opposite side of these now. Obviously, the big thing as well was the fumbles that the team have had to start the season, too. I think they're on the turnover ratio. I think they're -9 at the moment as well. It's been a really, really poor start. And I just want to ask, do you think Kevin O'Connell's seat is starting to get a little hot in Minnesota, or do you think he's going to be safe and be allowed to decide whether or not he wants to rebuild or, you know, keep rolling with Kirk?
I don't know. I think that is a difficult question, and it comes down to where the management are going to put the blame for this. If I remember right, how many years is Kevin O'Connell the head coach now of the Vikings?
This is his second year.
So he's always had Kirk Cousins, and in that way he's limited. My opinion, or at least my memory, is that he's one of these kind of offensive guru type. That's the kind of vibe that's around him. So I think that if that's still the case in the management, that's still the mentality around him, I think he gets one shot to rebuild this offense around a new quarterback. I think he has to get it right. I mean, that's a given, right? If you're under pressure, you have to succeed. But I think he's shown some shaky ground in the run game. I think they got rid of Dalvin Cook. That run game has not been good for the last couple of years, especially when the most efficient and effective Kirk Cousins was arguably built around that play action style. And so they had to get around that a little bit. And I think that showed in that one possession games, right? You're not incentivized to run the ball, especially if it's kind of down to the stretch, the last score is going to win the game. You're going to need to air it out. So I think that's something that needs to be looked at, whether or not he can balance the run game. I think it's more than just the quarterback. But I think the blame now, as you get into year 3 and year 4, okay, you get your new quarterback, but I think there's plenty of other things he needs to improve and optimize within that team. Arguably the best room is the wide receiver room. Are we talking enough about all the other sides? Are we talking about the defensive side of the ball, which for a long time was very dominant there in the Vikings organization? And I think the defensive line in particular is missing a few of those really dominant pieces that I had in years gone by.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you there on that one. But my issue with the head coach at the moment is, in the 2 seasons that they've been there, it seems like they always need to come back from a deficit. They haven't been able to establish and maintain leads. And I think that is where Kirk Cousins lives and breathes. If he can get out to a lead, he can manage a game. That's where a lot of his wins have come from in his past career. Now, last year was the exception. They came back and won in a lot of one-score games last season. But this season, because they've lost, as down the hill Dalvin Cook is gone, he has been a big loss to this offense. They cannot rely on him. I think he had like 1,100 scrimmage yards last season, which is just a big piece to be losing out on from your offense. And Madison has not picked that up at all. So that's where that is stemming from. But yeah, as an offensive guru, like you said, Fionn, they should be able to adapt to that and find other ways to move the football on the ground if Maddison is not doing the job. So, yeah, I would say his seat should be becoming hot, but I would agree that he is going to get another year to build around a quarterback that's not called Kirk Cousins.
Dara, I had a really quick look here on the app. Kirk Cousins leads the league in pass attempts this year, and I think that speaks a lot when your run game isn't where it needs to be. Next is Matt Stafford and then Joe Burrow after him. So, and Sam Howell in fourth. So I think at least that's the trend I'm reading into that, right? There's much more than just the quarterback. But again, if you're this offensive guru guy, yeah, one shot, right? Now you get open book, open checkbook, build, get the guys you think best fits your offensive philosophy, but it better work. And also somebody has to be taking care of this defense because as we mentioned, it's not where it was in years gone by.
It will be interesting to see now with Jefferson on IR if the pass attempts average still stays as high as it does. Because when you have someone like Justin Jefferson, of course you're going to show the ball. Regardless of the run game, whether it's good or bad, I wonder if the numbers will sort of decline a little bit and maybe they might try and lean on the run game a little bit. You know, Alex Mattison has been a little underwhelming. They traded for Cam Akers from the Rams. He only got his first touches last weekend against the Chiefs. Maybe his workload is going to increase now as well, and we'll see there. But plenty of interesting times ahead for the Minnesota Vikings, and we just wonder when it comes closer and closer to that trade deadline at the end of the month to see what sort of rumors are going to be coming out of Minnesota and if they are selling or if they are going to hold on to their pieces for the rest of the season. Let's move on to the AFC, and we're going to talk a little bit about the New England Patriots because they are one and four at the moment after a 34-0 drubbing at home by Derek Carr and the New Orleans Saints of all teams. Mac Jones is not good. I'm just going to put it out there. He's not good. The coaching staff is not great. Rob is not here with us tonight, but he did put a thing into the chat on Sunday during the Patriots game where the question whether this was all Bill Belichick or all Tom Brady is starting to get answered now. I guess you could see it that way, but Fiona, I'll start with you first on this one. The Pats at 1-4 and Mac Jones struggling again. What are we to make of this team, and what are we to do with this team for the rest of the year?
Yeah, look, it's really interesting. I don't know what to make of Mac Jones. I mean, he had that rough first year, good second year, and now he's dropped off then, or was it a good first year, a decent first year?
No, it was a good first off, year. Yeah.
Dropped off consecutively after that. So he clearly has the type of skill set that is needed for specifically a Bill Belichick offense. What I don't see is both his improvement, which is obviously concerning, and there's no getting away from his performance. But let's be honest here, lads. They can't run the ball. The receivers are well covered most of the time. They can't block for them, and they can't stop the other team from scoring. So this is a complete collapse for the New England Patriots, something that is focused on the quarterback room for sure as symbolic of this. But for me, this is an organization that's in absolute turmoil. They added some very questionable players in terms of their age and their performance profile. Ezekiel Elliott, to name one. I mean, I understand going after a running back when the running game hasn't been particularly strong. I know Stevenson didn't do too badly last season. But that's just, it's a head scratcher, right? He got basically demoted in Dallas. This wasn't like, we're going to trade for the starting running back of the Dallas Cowboys. This was at some points the third string running back on the Dallas Cowboys. So these are some of the head scratchers. I think I remember they had four tight ends on the roster at some point that everyone thought this was like big.
Well,
brain,
they spent a
Belichick
lot of money.
Move.
Yeah, they spent a lot of money in free agency to bring in Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith. Yeah. That was before the start of last season. Hunter Henry was, you could say, was all right. You know, you could say he was kind of a success. Johnny Smith really didn't fit into that offense. He's moved on. Now they brought in Mike Gesicki this year as well. Again, hasn't been working out too well either. But the thing that, the argument that has been brought against the Patriots for years, even during the time of Tom Brady, towards the end of his career there, was that they never invested in the offense. They expected whoever they got, it could have been any bum or anything like that off the street, and whoever they got to play in those positions, Tom Brady would find them. And I think that's continued thinking that Mac Jones will find them. Mac Jones is not Tom Brady. Mac Jones is not even good enough to polish Tom Brady's rings. And you can't go on that, well, He'll find them. He won't. You're throwing to, I think, who's our leading receiver? Kendrick Bourne?
They have some guys out there as well, though. They have some guys out there. They have Juju Smith-Schuster, who was decent with the...
Who's a bum?
He seems like a bum now, but he did bits with the Steelers. And then they have Devontae Parker, who had a great career with Miami. These guys are not just bums off the street. And Mac Jones is not able to find them.
Yeah, look,
it's let's stay in the AFC East, okay? So you have obviously the Patriots, Miami, Jets, and Bills. Do you think Juju Smith-Schuster is even the third wide receiver on any of those teams? Don't think so.
Maybe the Jets, maybe.
Yeah, I think he's the Jets' third wide receiver.
He's ahead of Randall Cobb.
I'd put him ahead of Alan Lazard, to be honest.
Yeah, ahead of Adam Lazard. I'd do that for sure. Yeah.
I don't know. I think that ever since his, first or second season in Pittsburgh, he's fallen off a cliff. Okay, he was in KC and he won a ring. But like how I was explaining with Tom Brady and he put anyone in front of him, he'll find them. You do that with Patrick Mahomes right now, he'll find you. You know, he had Kadarius Toney, you know, catching passes in the Super Bowl last year. You know, I think there's certain ones like Juju Smith-Schuster who's name gets brought up as a top wide receiver because of his past. It's kind of like, what have you done for me lately? And I honestly forgot Juju Smith-Schuster moved to New England until I think week three, where he caught one pass.
Yeah. My issue is not really with the wide receivers, right? I understand where you're coming from, Dara, that these guys have not done much lately, but you got to look at the other side of the coin there. Who's throwing them the football? And that is Mac Jones. I think with the way things are running at the moment in the Patriots, they have not invested in that O-line. They have not invested in the running game. And they continue to roll with Mac Jones. And I think Mac Jones, now I'm not able to say this with any degree of certainty, but from the outside, it looks like he's not a likable character and he does not have the confidence of that locker room. So when you have guys to the outside who are not confident in your play, that link up is never going to happen. I'm surprised they've left Mac Jones in for as long as they have, because at 1-4 in that division, they're pretty much no-hopers at this stage, right? They're not making the playoffs, so why not try Bailey Zappe? Bailey Zappe looks like the more dynamic quarterback of the two and can throw the ball, I would say, to probably the same level as Mac Jones.
Well, at the moment, he's only got about half of the completion percent of Mac Jones. Now, his sample size is not particularly big for this season. That's a given. I think Mac Jones is going to see out this season because I don't think Bailey Zappe has it. But he didn't put him under any pressure in the offseason. He's had limited outings, sure, for the last 2 weeks, like mop-up duty the last two games that he came in on. So we're not really going to judge him on that. But I don't know where they turn. I don't know if they have any capital. Bill Belichick is usually fairly tight-pursed in terms of moving things around. It wasn't usual to see him go out and get those tight ends in the free agency over the last couple of years. So I don't know, like, as you mentioned, Ryan, who's going to trade for Kirk Cousins. Well, teams who need a quarterback is certainly the Patriots, but would they give up even a third rounder for Kirk Cousins, or would they try?
I don't think they give up a seventh. That's their style.
That's their MO. That's exactly the point I'm trying to make. And so I think Mac Jones plays every game this season. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think it's going to be ugly as a Patriots fan for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Just on the Bailey Zappi thing, I agree with Fionn in terms of, you know, Bailey, he had a shot at it last year. He was given a run of games last year. They decided that he wasn't good enough and they actually cut him in the offseason. They brought in Matt Corral and saw that he was worse. And then they had to bring back Bailey Zappi on the practice squad. And he's since been promoted to the active roster. So just for that, I think, yeah, Mac Jones would be left out there. But I can see a lot of changes coming in New England after this season. I don't think Bill Belichick's on the hot seat in terms of, I don't think he is in trouble to be fired immediately, but I can almost say that I doubt he's going to be back next year. I think that because there's a big rebuild needed in New England, and I don't know if he's going to be the one to do it. I think this is his third year, so next year would be Mac Jones's last year, unless they pick up a fifth year option. I would not be surprised if they don't pick up the fifth year option on him either. I think there's a lot of changes coming for New England, and I'm sure a lot of, you know, fans sort of air age and a little older are welcoming this period of, you know, darkness for the New England Patriots after all the success that they've had. Some people are probably thinking it's about time. But still, the Jets still won't be able to beat them no matter what anyway, either way. Let's move on to Dallas. Let's have a little chat about Dallas, because they were destroyed by the 49ers on the Sunday Night Football, 42 points to 10. They didn't lay a glove on them at all. I think they had 8 total first downs in the whole game, which is just criminal. Dak is continuing to be the turnover machine. I still think my take on Trey Lance being a starter before the end of the season is still in with a shot. But, you know, Fionn, you are the resident NFC East fan in this group. So, Dallas Cowboys, are we finally seeing the true Dallas Cowboys now? And what they are going to be for the rest of the year, or has this game sort of been a bump in the road?
I don't know if we're seeing the true Cowboys, but it certainly makes me worried if I'm a Cowboys fan for the traditional collapse towards the end of the season. And here's the reason I say this. So we started off, obviously, everyone remembers 40-0 on the Giants. The Giants, now it's become clear, are absolutely not the side we thought they were going to be in the preseason, or this, I want to point out at this point, I did not think they were going to be, but they got an awful lot of hype around the media in terms of the preseason of what the Giants were capable of. They beat the Jets, who it's now obvious are not up to a whole lot. They lost to the Cardinals, who are also not up to a whole lot. And then they beat the Patriots, that we've just spent 15 minutes explaining why they're not up to a whole lot. So the 49ers is the first good team that they've played. Now, I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that this is doomsday for the Cowboys, but let me kind of get to the bottom of my point. Upcoming games: Chargers, Rams, Giants, Panthers, Seahawks.
You missed the Eagles as well in there.
And then you've got 2 games against Washington. They're going to be winnable games, right? They're certainly within the realms of possibility for Dallas to win. Even as a Washington fan, you would have to say at this point of the season, they're for sure probably favorites in all of those games. The problem is they've got 1 game against the Eagles. That's going to be tough, but it's a division game. I imagine that's going to be close. I fancy the Eagles to win it. The problem is their run into the playoffs, if they do get there, is going to be Eagles, Bills, Dolphins, Lions. That's the last 4 games of the season. Now, on a traditionally faulty and stuttery team that stumbles their way into the playoffs and usually gets walloped in the first round,
that's going to be nerve-wracking as a Dallas fan. That's going to be nail-biters right through those last 4 weeks of the season. And I think it's going to be interesting from my perspective to watch how they handle that. Again, I don't think it's going to be an issue in the short term. I think they bounce back against the Chargers. I think they look good against the Chargers. I think that's the next game, is it? Yeah. And then there's going to be the Rams, and I think then the Washington are in there somewhere. So I think they have three games to get themselves steadied again. My concern is we know how good the 49ers are, but there's some really good teams to close out that season. Bills, Dolphins in particular are going to be great. And the Lions have showed to be pretty strong opponents on anybody on any given day. So that's going to be a tricky little run in. But yeah, I think that's my take. I am glad I told everyone in the preseason as soon as Dak came out and said, I'm going to throw less than 10 interceptions this season. I told everyone to absolutely hammer the over on that. He's already on 4. I think it's looking good on that. I think he's going to aim for about 12 this season, maybe even more. So, yeah, anyway, that's my synopsis of where this is. Probably not great to lose that big. I think it makes the long-term nervous, but the short-term probably okay. I don't think this derails the season any more than the season kind of naturally derails for the Cowboys in the recent years.
I'd have to disagree with you, Fiona. Over the next three games, there are three losable football games. There is enough talent in that Chargers team and enough talent in that Rams team to beat those Cowboys on any given Sunday. I'm going to chalk the Eagles game down as a loss as well, although those in-division games are always a little bit more difficult. We saw that with the Commanders versus the Eagles there last week. But yeah, I think that there's enough talent there in the Chargers to beat them on any given day. There's enough talent there in the Rams to beat them any given day. So I think the bum holes are going to be a little bit clenched going into this three-game stretch. If they can come out of it 2-1, they'll be over the moon. But there is a chance that they go 0-3 in the next three-game schedule.
Right, yeah, how do you see it falling?
For the next three games, I think they might go 1-2. I think they lose against the Chargers in Philadelphia, and I think they can win a home against the Rams. But then again, Cooper Kupp is back, and you know, Puka Nacua there, and you know, I know we give a lot of shit to Trayvon Diggs, but he obviously, their defense was all right before he got injured, and since they've gone injured, they've allowed a lot get by them. So whoever's going to cover those lads, I wonder. But yeah, just see, I don't know what it is. It's that, you know, thing of, yeah, just Dallas are Dallas. And I think while they have Dak at quarterback, I don't think they're ever going to get past the first round of the playoffs, or even make it to a Super Bowl, because I know they actually were in the division around a couple of years ago. I don't think that he is the guy. I haven't thought he's the guy the last couple of years. There's been a lot of excuses made for Dak. Oh, he was injured. He came back. Oh, Kellen Moore was his OC, and he's gone now. So obviously he's going to play great now. Not really. I'm just waiting on that yearly Dak injury as well. That's going to happen soon. That means he's going to go on IR and be out for 4 weeks.
That'll help his interception total. Yeah.
That will.
He does this every year, though. Fiona still throws 10 plus.
Yeah. Watch, he hits 9 interceptions for the season, then comes down with some sort of
ankle hand.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much.
He's an angler.
yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's just like that. You've lost 42-10 to the 49ers. Them and the Eagles are your main threats for the NFC title. And you've gone out and you've gotten absolutely rinsed by one of them, and you're going to be playing the Eagles in 3 weeks' time and 4 weeks' time. Sorry, they have a bye week in between. And yeah, they're just, I don't see the hype around them. I just don't see what's going to, I just don't see anything about them to make to think that they're going to make a run. Yeah, I don't know. I think they're going to move off Dak. I think they should move off Dak. And, you know, just start new. Start new with a new quarterback next year. Who that's going to be, God knows.
How much guarantee money do they own?
His contract ends actually soon.
Because he reset the market when he signed that contract, didn't he? So
he did. He did. Yeah. So let me have a look. See, he signed a 4-year deal in 2021. So 2025. Yeah, he's going to.
There's 2 years left.
Yeah. This year and next season. Yeah. Next season, he's $59 million against the cap as well.
He's not going anywhere, lads.
That no one is going near that contract. And I wonder how much dead
what's,
money is
what's
going
the dead cut if they hit him? Or if they
yeah. Call him. Let me have a quick look here. The dead
just
cap.
While you're talking about that, though, or while you're looking that up, I think if they are going to draft a quarterback this year, if Shador Sanders declares eligible, he's the kind of guy that Jerry Jones would just absolutely go crazy for. He'll want Deion Sanders' son back in the building, all that sort of thing. So I reckon if he goes late in the first round, they'll be selecting him all day long.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if they cut him at any point this year, it's $89 million dead cap money. If they cut him next year, it's $61.9 million dead money.
He's not gone anywhere.
So they're rolling with Dak, is what you're saying.
They are rolling with Dak, at least for the time being. Oh, jeez, I've got to hire Dak's agent. Jesus Christ. Look at that money. Woo! Woo! But, I don't know. Are we still confident in the Cowboys to still make the playoffs?
No.
I think they have enough. The NFC is not good enough.
Rain, you have them losing the next 6 games in a row.
No, I said they could lose the next 3 in a row. But yeah, I don't see anybody else in the NFC kind of making that push to kind of get them out. It's
well, the Seahawks
places.
Are going to collapse at some point. They're somehow inexplicably at, what is it, 3-1, 4-1?
3-1.
That has to end at some point.
Yeah, they're going to lose games. Of course they're going to lose games. They're not going to go to season unbeating. But
so that's what I mean in terms of the
slot. Seahawks, Seahawks are 5th seed at the moment. And the Falcons are... Is it the
that's
Falcons?
Another one that's not going to last. Desmond Ridder Falcons, is never playing in the playoffs for the rest.
No, Falcons are 6th seed. And the Cowboys are the 7th seed at the moment. Now, I think if... I didn't see the permutations, but if Green Bay had won last night against the Raiders, they would have been the 7th seed and would have kicked Dallas out. But, you know, you never know. You never know. Like, the Rams could get some wins together. They could be a 7th seed.
Yeah, but I think what you're saying now is that we're setting the rest of the 6 as it is. I think there's 2 NFC South teams in at the moment, the Buccaneers and the Falcons. One of those 2 teams is not going to make it. I mean, if you could make sure that neither of them got it, they probably wouldn't, but someone has to win the division. So, that there's going to be drop-offs out of that group that's already in it at the moment, and I just don't see enough talent. Because that Cowboys team is talented. Like, Tony Pollard is excellent. That defensive line is stellar. Their secondary has been roasted a little bit, but... Yeah, there's the bones there. I think they're one of the stronger teams in the NFC.
I mean, Washington comes in the next 2 weeks, Falcons, and then the Giants. So it's conceivable that they might be 5-3 4-3, and that the Cowboys could also be 4-3 by the time we get to week 8. So I mean, I don't think even the race for second place in the NFC East is done quite yet. Well, I think Washington's inconsistencies now might be their Achilles heel on that one, I have to say. You just never know who they're going to win and who they're going to drop a game to. Yeah. I mean, they could beat the Eagles. They've beaten unbeaten teams the last 2 seasons in a row, inexplicably at like 6-7, 8-0. And then also you turn around and you get absolutely walloped by the quite useless Bears at the same time. Last week, so yeah. I mean, it's quite
well.
Hard to
was it they ran the Eagles quite close already this year? So, You know, you never know. But yeah, I know what you mean. I think that the Cowboys are benefiting from a poor NFC this year, big time, or else we would be talking about if they were in the AFC this year, we would maybe be really concerned for them and whether or not they are going to progress. But look, it's just a look at the draw, I guess. But yeah, look, we'll see. I am not fully sold on whether or not the Cowboys will make the playoffs. I'm just not. I can't. In the teams I trust and the teams I don't trust, they are in the don't trust column. I can't trust them. I can't trust a defense that started so well to be giving up as many yards as they are now as well. The offense has stuttered, and it shouldn't really be with, you know, players like CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Cooks, Michael Gallup. Tony Pollard, sorry, like you said. The short king himself, Juice Vaughn as well. So we'll see. But look, I don't know. I'm not totally sold on them. Lads, we have a couple of minutes left. I don't know. Is there anything else that we want to bring up before we sign off? Fionn, it's been nearly a week since the Commanders game against the Bears. The game that we thought was going to, you know, go the Commanders' way. We all had the Commanders going and taking that game against a poor Bear team. But DJ Moore decided that this is the game I announced myself as a Chicago Bears fan.
Yeah, look, I put it in the group chat. For me, the big concern is that 4 weeks in a row, you've allowed over 100 yard receiver each time it's been the number one wide receiver on the opposite team that's come in off the back of a huge game. And so the question for me is, where's the game plan to shut it down? I mean, is that not number one in the NFL? Make the second guy beat you, not the first guy. I mean, you know where the ball is going. I believe we're leading the league in what feels like the 10th year in a row for chunk plays over 25 yards. That seems to be a continuing problem. And the defensive line is finally starting to play well. Chase Young is looking slowly but surely like the player we drafted. So that's something I'm encouraged about. I think I know Forbes has been one of the ones to give up a lot of plays. He's also had quite a lot of good plays here and there. I think some of the communication on the back end, which has been the problem of Washington's defense for a long time, has helped them to be exposed. But as a rookie, you kind of hope that goes down as the season tracks along. Might be too late this season. I think streaky defense is certainly not what you want when you're kind of going, as Rian mentioned earlier, squeaky bum time to try and kind of get into the playoffs there. And we might be running Dallas close. We can certainly play the Eagles. I think the Eagles are gone in terms of winning the division now at this point. I think they're definitely the best team in the NFC East, maybe the NFC side of the draw. But yeah, I think disappointing, but then not totally out of the blue. Like, absolutely a game that if you told me at the end of the season, oh, that Washington's going to lose to this one, we're like, oh, yeah, I mean, that makes sense, right? And then the week after, we just ran the best team in the division to an overtime where we had a shot to win the game at the end, like right at the end, if we'd have gone for two. It just makes sense. And I think this is where, right, slowly the talent level has increased in Washington. Now the consistency has to increase. You have to be starting to put away these teams, not put yourself down big, not take slow to start. Credit to Hill. He came off two bad halves and delivered two good halves at the second half of both of those games. But you can't be doing that. We need to be getting them going first thing. And it needs to be complementary football, as they look to say in the NFL. The defense has to help them out.
Rian, on the Panther side of things, there was a
don't have an hour-long show, Dara.
Very, very, of course, the team are 0-5 after a tough loss against Detroit, but a very interesting press conference today by head coach Frank Reich, talking about the involvement, the hands-on involvement of owner David Tepper.
Yeah, absolutely. And before I get on to Tepper and all that sort of thing, I think the Carolina Panthers have been skating by a little bit in terms of this whole debate as to who's the worst team in the country. They're a very small market. Nobody really cares about the Carolina Panthers. But I have been watching the Carolina Panthers for 5 weeks straight now, and it is unwatchable. So I think they are now the unified worst team in the league. But yeah, moving on to what you said about David Tepper and his involvement in the team. He just doesn't seem like a football guy, and yet he wants to be involved at every level of the organization. I think that's why he liked the previous head coach, whose name escapes me. I just want to put him out of my head.
Previous head coach? Oh, that was it Matt Rhule?
Matt Rhule, yes. I wanted to get it out of my head altogether, so... yeah, I think that's why he liked him, because he was a similar sort of character. He wanted to be involved at every level. He was even getting involved in social media stuff, which was just bizarre. So, yeah, basically in the press conference, he came out and said, some owners are hands-off, other ones are hands-on, and I'm meeting with David Tepper every single week. And they're not fun meetings, but we're getting a lot out of it. And that really feels like jargon to me, to say, really just... piss off, leave me alone to do my job. And I would have to agree with him. For me, it's the job of the general manager to deal with the owner, be that intermediary between the kind of front office and the team itself, so that the coaches can coach and the owners can yap away about how they want the team run. But at the end of the day, it is down to the coach to make the decisions on the field. Now, people were reading into this a lot, reading between the lines, saying that, Frank Reich didn't want Bryce Young. That's what this is all about. I don't really buy into that. I think the way he was speaking about Bryce Young before the draft, particularly after we traded into the number one overall seed, he couldn't stop praising him. So I think he is the guy that Frank Reich wanted to go with. I think it's just other aspects, the way Tepper is really controlling, that he's feeling a little bit frustrated at the moment.
All right. Fair enough. We'll have plenty of time to talk more about that next week. And we'll see. Hopefully the Panthers will get their first win on the board. But who are they playing this week?
Bye week. So another L coming up.
They don't have a bye week. No.
I'm just saying they would lose in the bye week at the moment.
Let me see. I have the Panthers here. Let me see. Let me just see their schedule. Oh, it's just the easy task of going to Miami to face the Dolphins. Right.
Fair enough. Of course.
There's another
60 plus. Well, hey, look, if the Dolphins are going to lose any game, it's going to be that game. It's just one of those weird ones where you expect the unexpected. Who knows?
Well, possibly. That's the proper dub coming at me there. Sorry, Devon Achane now is going on IR, so he won't be able to rip it up against us, but there's still Raheem Mostert, and I think Jeff Wilson's coming back, so... And then you just have the case of, you know, Jalen Waddle.
We also have no cornerbacks, but they have Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill, so...
Yeah.
Is CJ Henderson really going to cover either of those guys? He's too slow. He's just too slow.
That's where we're going to wrap up this edition of the show. Before we go, I should also mention, if you are a 49ers fan and you are near Dublin or are going to be around Dublin at the weekend, the Irish faithful are having their first ever watch party for the 49ers fans in Buskers on the Ball in Temple Bar. Of course, it's the 49ers at the Cleveland Browns. So that game kicks off at 6 o'clock. Or do the clocks go back this week? So it'll be 5 o'clock Irish time. So check out the Irish Faithful or at 49ers IRE on X or Twitter, whatever you call it now, to be kept up to date with that. But like I said, that's all the time we have for on this edition of the show. If you watch this on YouTube, make sure you have liked this video. You are subscribed to the channel to be kept up to date with all of our shows. Also, make sure you follow us on our socials at UndercenterPod, both on X or Twitter, whatever it's called, and Instagram, UndercenterPodcast, to listen to us on the go, wherever you get your podcast. Just search for it. We are there to have listen to us. But yeah, that's it. Lads, Rian, Fionn, thank you so much.
Thanks as always.
Much appreciated.
And until next time, stay safe, and we'll see you soon.